Our gospel for this evening comes from Mark. We are in the 10th chapter. James and John, Zebedee's sons, came to Jesus and said, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked. They said, "Allow one of us to sit on your right and the other on your left when you enter your glory." Jesus replied, "You don't know what you're asking. Can you drink the cup I drink or receive the baptism I receive?" "We can," they answered. Jesus said, "You will drink the cup I drink and receive the baptism I receive. But to sit at my right or my left hand isn't mine to give. It belongs to those for whom it has been prepared." Now when the other 10 disciples heard about this, they became angry with James and John. Jesus called them over and said, "You know that the ones who are considered the rulers by the Gentiles show off their authority over them, and their high-ranking officials order them around. But that's not the way it will be with you. Whoever wants to be great among you will be your servant. Whoever wants to be first among you will be slave to all. For the human one didn't come to be served, but rather to serve and to give his life to liberate many people." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Christ.
Please be seated. In our prior school district, in the elementary building where Kinder went, the school had a program called Watchdogs, D-O-G-S, Dads of Great Students. A little gendered, yes, but the purpose of this was that dads, grandpas, uncles, step-parents, maybe really close male figures for kids who were students in the class could volunteer to be a role model. So all these watchdogs, we would get together, and I did this, of course. So we all got together at the beginning of the school year, and we went through like a morning training session. And the purpose of the watchdogs was, besides the fact you got a really cool bright yellow shirt and a little sticker that said watchdog with your name on it, besides that, what you were really there for was, of course, to be a positive role model. So we got to hang out with our own kids for lunch and maybe for recess. But that was about it. We were assigned different classes. Every period, and there was, what, 8 or 9 periods, every period we were somewhere different. So it might be in second grade, it might be fourth grade, it might be fifth grade, sixth grade. We would kind of bounce around from period to period, moving up and down the halls with the kids, getting to know kids and being present and visible, but then also being in those classes to help out. You know, we're a volunteer parent. And so every day, their goal was to have 2 or 3 watchdogs floating around the building. During one of these periods, it was one of the older elementary classes, I was sitting in the back, and this teacher was very patiently, they were in the math portion of the day, and they were working on this math problem, and the teacher was working through it and kind of talking it through, and in the way that I could tell, the teacher had done this a few times already before, so it was meant to be reviewed. He was walking them through the first problem, and then they had the next two on their sheet of paper on their desk, and once they started doing that, if I wanted to, I could get up and help whoever needed it. But he was working through the problem, and I don't remember the math at all. That's all gone to history in my mind. But I remember that it was math, and he was working on it. And he turned, and he said, "All right, the next two are yours. Give it a shot." And immediately, a little guy in the back, his arm went shooting up into the sky, reaching for the clouds, got the teacher's attention. And without a breath from the teacher, said, "I don't get it. This doesn't make any sense." And again, I don't remember the details of the math, what that actually was, but what I remember distinctly is the teacher. How he, for maybe a millisecond, sighed. You know, that deep sigh that sometimes we'll even get of like, feel like we've been down, you know, that feel like I've been down this road 1,000 times before, we've gone through this. But he sighed, but for a millisecond, it was that short. Sighed, but then he smiled. And he said, "All right, we've talked about this before, but let's do it again." And then he turned back to the board and walked through the entire math formula again. I thought of that scene this week as I was reading through this text. One, I started thinking about how often the teachers in our lives get to say that in a week, a month, a year. "All right, we've talked about this, but let's do it again." It also made me wonder, as I was reading through our gospel for this week, how often in our walk with Christ we do something, we say something, we imply something, we just be ourselves, and Jesus for a millisecond sighs, and then maybe under his breath or maybe in our hearts or in our thoughts says, all right, we've talked about this, but let's do it again. We're in chapter 10 of the Gospel of Mark. We don't have it in our reading, but it happens in verse 32. So right before where our gospel starts, Jesus tells the disciples for the third time, they're on their way to Jerusalem. For the third time, he has told them, I will be arrested, I will be put on trial, I will be tortured, and I will die. He is proclaiming the cross. He did that in chapter 8. He did it in chapter 9. He's done it here in chapter 10. So he's laying the groundwork, and he's been telling the disciples this over and over. And he tells us this over and over. I mean, we come to worship every week, and we hear about the cross. Jesus tells us about our call to be compassionate and all the work that we are called to do on behalf of our neighbors. Jesus is laying out the words of the cross to tell us that our call is to take ourselves out of the center, out of the conversation, and maybe take ourselves out of this building and out of ourselves, so that we can serve the vulnerable, the oppressed, the neighbors, our family, our co-workers, those who are longing for good news and may not know the nearness of Christ. Three times, chapter 8, chapter 9, chapter 10, Jesus talks about the cross. Inevitably, because the disciples do this, their response to the cross is to ask some sort of question or to do some sort of thing that really doesn't have anything to do with the cross at all or even with Jesus, but it's really about themselves. At one point, the disciples hear about the cross and they start bickering amongst themselves, hoping Jesus doesn't hear them about who's going to be the greatest of all of them. There's another point where Jesus tells them, through the message of the cross, our call is to serve the vulnerable. And he uses kids as like the living example of, be like this, love these people. Here's literally what you do. This is the cross. And the disciples respond by taking a bunch of parents and folks who bring their kids and trying to shove them out of the room so they can have more time with Jesus. And now here we are, chapter 10, heading down the road. They've heard this before. And James and John scurry up to Jesus and try to pull him off to the side. We can imagine maybe Jesus is out in front of the disciples. Maybe at this point, he's had a lot of the disciples and he needs a little time by himself. Walks ahead of the crowd. James and John scurries up to be next to him. They kind of tug on his cloak a little bit and say, Jesus, we got a question. And Jesus plays along. And they say, put us at the right in the hand, right and left hand of you in your glory. So there's a lot of different ways we can interpret that verse, but there's a couple that we could boil it down to. One, back in chapter 8, before this whole cross scenario started being played out, Peter calls Jesus the Anointed, which means the Messiah, which means Christ, which sounds like he's close, and he is, but he's not quite there. Anointed, Messiah, Christ could also mean King. So even though Jesus has been talking about this thing of the cross and he's going to be arrested and he's going to be put on trial and he's going to be tortured and he's going to die, that's all great, but maybe he's just like, you know, laying a worst case scenario. But the reality is he's anointed. So when we get to Jerusalem, maybe what he's going to start doing is knocking around a few heads and he's going to be king. And when he is king of the nation, of God's people, well then, I mean, there's a couple of spots there at the table that might be open. Maybe James and John can put in their resume now. That in and of itself is a little cringeworthy, but there's another interpretation that's maybe even a little bit more cringy. What if James and John get it? What if they know that Jesus is going to die? What if that's beginning to register in their mind and they're beginning to think for themselves, job opportunity? Or maybe what they're starting to think for themselves is if Jesus is going to die and go to wherever it is that Jesus goes after he dies, and he's going to be with God, that maybe when he gets there, he could slap a couple of post-it notes on the seats that are next to him at his right and his left at the throne of God. Whatever James and John were thinking, and we have no idea what they were thinking, what we encounter in this text is the same thing that we encounter, you and I encounter in our relationship with God. Jesus calls on us to serve the vulnerable, to serve the oppressed, to take ourselves out. Take ourselves out of the conversation, take ourselves out of the building, take ourselves out of the center. And James and John step right into the middle. which is where you and I like to place ourselves as well. When we start calculating the risk and wondering what could happen, and then also, like James and John, we may not put it in the same language as him, we may not be quite as cringy or direct, but we may even be calculating to ourselves, what's the payout in the end? If we're going to be the good, faithful congregation of Christ that's going to stand with the vulnerable, that's going to proclaim Black Lives Matter, that is going to walk with LGBTQ neighbors, that's going to do all these things that many people may be uncomfortable doing, we know that we might, well, let's be honest, we might struggle a little bit with that. We might struggle as a congregation. We might struggle with some of our numbers. We might struggle with how we look in the community. So wouldn't it be great to know that we're doing all of this and at some point we're going to get the reward. At some point we're going to get the payout. At some point we're going to see the people in our pews, or maybe we're going to know that we've caught the ear or the eye of God. James and John have put themselves in the center of the conversation, even though Jesus keeps telling us that we have to take ourselves out. And we all do it. It's what we do. We are human. It's part of our nature. It's part of our very existence that we continually are looking at the world through our own perspective, through our own understanding, through our own wants and needs, our own goals, our own hopes, our own aspirations. James and John, they want the good seats. You and I do too. Our seats may not be the same as the ones that James and John want, but we all find ourselves striving and hoping that maybe we'll be recognized, maybe we'll be seen, maybe we'll be loved a little bit more, maybe we'll be known. Maybe we'll get a little extra on our ice cream with God when the day comes. And Jesus responds. Now, we're envisioning the sigh. That's not actually in the Gospel of Mark, but we can envision that sigh. But Jesus responds with incredible patience by telling James and John and the disciples and you and me that his cup is our cup and that his baptism is our baptism. Now, in part, he's doing this to tell us that, of course, that we are walking with him. We're walking to Jerusalem. Our call is to pick up the cross. We won't do it, but our call is to do that. So, of course, his cup, which, by the way, he prays about when he's in the Garden of Gethsemane in the Gospel of Mark, and the baptism, these are the walk that Jesus is taking, and he's leading us in this exact same walk. So, of course, what is his becomes ours. But we can also hear this as a word of love and forgiveness. When we remember again through our sacramental understanding of God that through these waters we are bound to Christ forever. We die. Jesus takes our old lives and drowns them in our baptismal waters, and every day we rise again to new life. Jesus recreates us. Jesus reforms us again to be in the image of God every day. Every moment, we are forgiven and loved. And this bond that we have with Christ, that we receive through these waters, is eternal and it is unbreakable. There is nothing we can do. Even our most cringeworthy selves cannot separate us from the love of God. So Jesus' baptism is our baptism. And when we share this meal in whatever form it may be, and as often as we do, we remember again that forgiveness. We remember how we take in Christ's love, Christ's body and blood into our lives. He becomes us. We, for a moment, become, in Luther's words, little Christ, transformed, reformed, and sent back out for a moment. Maybe it is just for a breath or a sigh or a glimpse. Jesus pulls us out of the center. He pulls us out to remind us again that our call is to stand and to love the vulnerable, those whose lives matter less, those who have been cast out, who have been cast to the margins, who have been told to stay out of the center of the community. To stay out is where we are called to stand with Jesus. Knowing that our reward is the cross, but through the cross is our forgiveness, our love, our redemption, our new life. And our new opportunity that Jesus gives James and John and the disciples and you and me, our new chance to speak love and grace and forgiveness for those with whom we walk. Amen.